Following is a synopsis of the Rebbe's talk of Shabbos Parshas Vayigash, Zayin Tevis, Tavshin and Beis, corresponding to the year 1992. It's well known that the Torah, which comes from the word hara, instruction, contains within it instructions even when it discusses different historical narratives. And these are eternal lessons for every Jew and for every period. There are general instructions, and there are also specific instructions consistent with the particular situation in which a Jew is situated. The same is true in our parsha. It begins with the words, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches him, meaning Yosef. And there is an eternal lesson from this, from which we could learn how we have to conduct ourselves today, in the present moment, as we stand in the last moments before the complete redemption. At first glance, you could see the connection of our parsha to the redemption, to the Geula, not in the parsha itself, but in the Haftorah of the parsha. There it tells us that God showed Yechezkel, the prophet Yechezkel, that in the future redemption, the two kingdoms of Yehuda and Yosef will become unified into one kingdom, and their king will be King David, or descendant of King David, who descends from the tribe of Yehuda. And in this vision, God shows Yechezkel and commands him to take two pieces of wood, to write the word Yehuda on one of them, the word Yosef on the other one, and to join them together in order to indicate that this is the way it'll be in the time of redemption. There will be a unified kingdom. But in the Haftorah, we can only see the connection to redemption. We don't see how it wants us to conduct ourselves as we prepare for the redemption. So we have to understand what is the lesson from this parsha in terms of how we prepare ourselves. In addition to this, there's a question about understanding the connection between the parsha and the Haftorah. Usually the Haftorah is a reflection of the parsha. In the parsha, it talks about the preeminent position of Yosef. He is the viceroy. He is the one in control of the land of Egypt. And Yehuda depends on him and has to plead with him to free Benjamin. When you read the Haftorah, you get the opposite impression, that Yehuda is the one who will be the preeminent force, that his descendant will be the king and will reign over the tribe of Yosef as well. In addition to the fact that the Haftorah and the Parsha seem to be opposites, there's also an apparent contradiction in this Parsha from the beginning to the end, because we know that the end and the beginning are always connected. The end is wedged in the beginning, and the beginning in the end. Now, if you look at the end of the Parsha, it talks about how Yisrael, that's Jacob, settled in the land of Egypt, where? In the land of Goshen, and he inherited the land, and they multiplied exceedingly. They were very strongly entrenched in the land that Paro commanded to give them Meitav Arts, the best, the most choice pieces of land, and they were very successful there, very prosperous. So that's an indication of the very high level of control they had over the land. Whereas in the beginning of the parsha, it talks about a very difficult position they were in, that Yehuda and his brothers had to plead with Yosef, the ruler of the land of Egypt, before they knew that he was their brother Yosef, which is the very opposite of what we see at the end of the parsha. So the Rebbe explains that if we reflect on this whole parsha, we see that when Yehuda approaches Yosef to ask that he frees Benjamin, he didn't do it with submission, but he did it with strength. He did it with determination, with courage, and in an unconventional way, in spite of the fact that it seems that Yosef was in control and was on top. Yehuda acts as if he is in control. Yosef was the absolute ruler of the land of Egypt. As Yehuda himself says to Yosef, Kamocha Kaparo, you are just like Pharaoh. But that did not deter Yehuda. He approaches him, doesn't ask permission, forcefully speaks to him using tough language, for which he put his life in danger. So the pasuk, the verse that says Vayigash Elav Yehuda in the beginning of the parsha, that Yehuda approaches him, actually indicates the strength of Yehuda, the forcefulness of Yehuda. So now we can understand the connection between the beginning of the parsha with the strong position of Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel, that we read about at the end of the parsha. And we could also understand the connection between the beginning of the parsha and how we see the preeminent position that Yehuda is in the Haftorah, that he will be the only leader of all the tribes, including Yosef. In essence, the strength of Yehuda and his approach to Yosef is what gave the power to Jacob and his children to be able to be settled in Egypt in a very appropriate way, to be fruitful and multiply exceedingly. And this was the preparation for the preeminent status of Yehuda that will be revealed fully in the time of redemption. But a question can still be asked. This power that Yehuda had displayed came because he thought he's talking to a non-Jewish king or viceroy, and he had to use chutzpah and determination to talk to him. But after it became clear that Yosef was the Mishnah LeMelech, that the viceroy was none other than his own brother Yosef, he didn't have to use such strength and such courage. So the fact that the children of Israel could settle in Egypt in a peaceful and a very tranquil way came because of Yosef, who commanded that they give the Bnei Yisrael the best of the land. And in his merit, it is Pharaoh says, the best of all of Egypt should be for you. So what did Yehuda's courage really help? There was no need for the courage because Yosef was the one who was providing everything. And if it was only a temporary amount of courage and strength, so then what does it have to do with the future strength of Yehuda in the time of redemption, which is what the Torah is about? But since Torah is eternal, we're compelled to say that Yehuda's strength, that temporary display of strength, has endured beyond that which Yosef's strength endured, because Yosef followed the rules, the conventions of Mitzrayim, of Egypt. Yehuda gave the power that we can rule over Egypt and the whole world like Yosef, but more than that, that we can transcend the world and transcend Golus and transcend exile entirely. Now, later on, we read about Mordechai Yehudi, who lived in the time of Ahasuerus. And even though it's many, many centuries after the events of Yosef and Yehuda, but it seems to be very much consistent with Yehuda that we read about in our parsha. He also was not deterred by the power of Ahasuerus, and he did everything he had to do, even if it went against the rules of the king. Ahasuerus made a party, and he said, "Lasos kitzon ish v'ish," to do in accordance with the will of each person. And the Talmud says that what does he mean by ish v'ish, each man and man? What's the repetition there? To tell you that Ahasuerus ordered that everything be done in accordance with the will of Mordechai, who's called Ish Yehudi, and Haman, who's also called Ish Tsar Va'oyev. And the Medrash gives two explanations for this. One explanation is, it mocks Ahasuerus. God says to him, "I can't satisfy everyone, all of my creatures, and you want to satisfy everyone to do according to the will of Ish v'Ish?" Two people, the Medrash continues, want to marry one woman. Could she marry both of them? She has to choose, this one or that one. Tomorrow, two people will come to you to be judged, Mordechai and Haman. Could you satisfy both of them? You will have to exalt one and execute the other. So from this Medrash, it seems that Ahasuerus did something that was wrong. How could you satisfy Mordechai and Haman? Another explanation in the Medrash says that, yes, today it is impossible to reconcile two mutually exclusive approaches of two different people. But that's only now. But in the future, redemption, God will be able to sustain even contradictory wills and desires. That's what the Medrash says in its second explanation. However, from the Talmud, from the Gemara, we could deduce that Ahasuerus was capable of reconciling contradictory choices. So the question is, how could that happen? According to both Midrashim, both interpretations of the Medrash make it very clear that now, at least now, before the redemption, you cannot reconcile two opposite desires. So the answer is that based on nature, based on the way the world is conducted, based on the divine energy that is connected to the world, you cannot reconcile and execute two opposite directions, as the first Medrash says. In the time of Geula, when God will reveal his very essence, reveal levels of godliness that transcend the world, he could then reconcile two opposites, as the second Medrash says. The Gemara goes a step further. The Gemara says that even now, in the time of Ahasuerus, a Jew, by being firmly connected to God, he can do Kirtzon Ish V'Ish, just as in the time of redemption. Even now, we could accomplish that reconciliation. And the Rebbe explains as follows. In Chassidus, it explains that Ahasuerus is a metaphor for God himself. And he established that the world should conduct itself Kirtzon Ish V'Ish. Everyone has the choice, the ability to conduct himself in accordance with Mordechai's desires, or God forbid, in accordance with Haman's desires. In actuality, you cannot do both. Mordechai wants holiness, Haman wants the opposite. So how could you do simultaneously these two contradictory desires? In greater depth, the Rebbe says, Mordechai and Haman represent two different, totally opposite approaches. Mordechai wants to conduct himself as a Jew, and everything that is not connected to serving God, even if it's not against the Shulchan Aruch, that is considered like Avodah Zarah, like idol worship to the Jew. Every Jew's function is to serve God. As it says, Ani lo nivreisi elo l'shamash eskeini. I was only created to serve my Maker. All of his deeds are only and exclusively for serving God, and are part of his service of God. In this approach, Mordechai is interested in. Anything outside of that approach, to Mordechai, the Mordechai Jew, that's Avodah Zarah, that's a foreign service. That means it's a service, it's an approach that is foreign to what he represents. Haman wants Avodah Zarah. Everything that is foreign to the Jew, everything that is not connected to serving God, he argues, since God created nature, the laws of nature, the world, and the Golos, that a Jew should be subservient in Golos, so he has to take that seriously and reckon with that, at least to engage in neutral things, permissible things, and not connect it to serving God. If so, these two desires are totally opposite. The will of Mordechai negates, it would seem, the approach that you have to take the world seriously. And if you have to take the world seriously and reckon with it, then you have to be subservient to the behavior of the world, Kirtzon Haman, the desire of Haman. So at first glance, it seems these are irreconcilable approaches. However, the chiddush, the novelty here, is that when you're connected to the essence of the Creator, you could sustain within the parameters of the world and in exile the will of Mordechai, because we are above all limitations. Now we can understand that the Medrash teaches us two opportunities that we have to serve God even in the time of exile. When we talk about mitzvahs, the commandments that are incumbent upon a Jew, based on the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, it's self-understood that nobody has any control over the Jew, not even in the time of exile. But when we talk about optional matters, neutral matters, a Jew could think that since God sent us into exile, this is the will of Haman, and God put us here, we are therefore, we would think, obligated to submit to the limitations of the world, and we cannot conduct ourselves in accordance with the will of Mordechai, not to bow down, not to kneel, not to be subservient in all of these matters. So it's not impossible to do Kirtzon Ish V'Ish. That's the first approach of the Medrash. That's based on the pathways of nature, based on what we call normal. But the second possibility is that God himself, from his perspective, enables us, empowers us, that even when the Jew is in this world and in exile, he can conduct himself in accordance with the will of Mordechai. He could transcend the limits imposed by the world. And this is where the Gemara, the Talmud's conclusion is, that even now, even at the time of Golus, when Haman's will seems to be prevalent, we have the power, by connecting ourselves to God, to do in accordance with the will of Mordechai, and with that to nullify the decree of Haman. All that we need is the choice of a Jew to go in that direction. Now the Rebbe says we can understand very well the quality of Yehuda's strength over Yosef's strength. Yosef was the ruler of Egypt, no question about that. But he was appointed by Pharaoh. He was subservient to the laws of the country. And even after he was appointed, he still had to answer to Pharaoh. He was Mishnah LeMelech, the second to the king. Yehuda approaches Yosef without permission. By that he was demonstrating that, notwithstanding the fact that he depends on Yosef, that he has the control over Binyamin and he could free him, but in spite of all that, he's approaching him with all his strength and all his might and all his courage. Even though he was in Golus, he was in exile, he conducted himself as if he wasn't. And that's why, through this, Bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people, received the power that even when they're in the land of Egypt, even when they're in Golus, they could dwell with strength, with firmness, v'yifru v'yirbu mod, and they multiplied exceedingly. Now we can also understand the connection between v'yigash elav Yehuda, Yehuda approaches Yosef, and the preeminent quality of Yehuda in the time of redemption, where Yehuda's descendant will be the only leader. This strength that Yehuda had demonstrated is because he had this total subservience to God, and therefore he was given the power by God to unify two opposites. You could be in Golus, he was in Golus, answering to Yosef, and you could be as strong as Mordechai was in the time of Golus. This will be fully realized and will fully materialize in the time of the complete redemption. Then the strength of Melech HaMashiach, David Avdi, my servant David, will spread to the whole world because of his strong connection to God. In many places it's explained that Mashiach's sovereignty, Mashiach who comes from the tribe of Yehuda, is in the merit of Yosef, who gave his strength to Yehuda when Yehuda approached him. But the truth is that the strength of Yehuda is even higher than the strength of Yosef, and the reason that he needed Yosef was only to reveal his own innate strength that will become fully manifested in the time of the true and complete redemption. Now the Rebbe says we can understand what is the lesson for us that is contained within the words Vayigash Elav Yehuda, and Yehuda approached him, from which we could determine how we're supposed to conduct ourselves in these last moments before the redemption. Throughout all of history, Jews could not really be strong because of the many decrees, the many horrific decrees of the nations. In spite of the fact that Yehuda and Mordechai and other tzaddikim were very strong, this was something that could not apply to most Jews. Now, there's a new phenomenon. The nations of the world no longer stand in our way as they did in the past. They do allow us to conduct ourselves the way God wants us to conduct ourselves. This is true in the United States, and it's true in other countries, and even Russia and other satellite countries, it is now true there as well. So what all this is dependent on is on the choice of the Jew exclusively. There are no outside, no external forces that stand in our way. Moreover, the Rebbe says, today, the non-Jewish governments actually support and help and assist the Jewish people. And you could not only conduct yourself with strength and determination in Jewish neighborhoods, but throughout the entire world, you can even influence non-Jews to observe their seven Noahide commandments. To such an extent that all of the preparations for the redemption have already been made, and we only have to refine the world and to bring the redemption that it should be down here in this world. We just have to reflect and to see that the world is begging that a Jew should show up and experience the true and complete redemption. And since the redemption is coming imminently, and when all the nations of the world will do only God's will. That's why even now, as a preparation for redemption, the non-Jews are not standing in the way of the Jewish people to serve God with all their might, because right now they're getting the strength from Melech HaMashiach, from the King Mashiach, to serve God the way one ought to serve God. And this then is the instruction that we derive from the words Vayigash Elav Yehuda. We have to show how we have the strength when it comes to Yahadus, to Judaism, to show the whole world that the world was created to facilitate the Jewish person's observance of Torah mitzvahs. And this will bring Mashiach's rule and sovereignty to the whole world in the time of the complete redemption. Now, an example of how a Jew is really in control of the world is what happened on Hei Tevis, Tavshin Mem Zayin, in 1987, when the non-Jewish federal court ruled that the library of the Rebbes of Chabad that were stolen and were taken into captivity from 770 should be returned there. But there are still books that belong to the Rebbes of Chabad that are in captivity in Russia, and they have not yet returned, in spite of the fact that even non-Jews in power order that they should be returned. So what can we do about this now? What we have to do is to bring holy books and words of Torah to our house and to our libraries. And now it's very easy because new books are being published today very frequently. We just have to purchase them, because in our world, something that's important has to cost something. So certainly it's true about words of Torah. So everyone should make a resolution without any delay in this matter by buying Svarim, by ordering them, and afterwards the Svarim will arrive immediately. And we should also use this opportunity to fulfill the custom to give Torah books, holy books, as gifts to others, including children, for holidays or for any other celebration. And may it be God's will that this should hasten the redemption of the Svarim of the library of the Rebbes of Chabad and their return to 770. And this redemption of captives, of the Svarim, of the books, will bring about the Pidyon Shavuim, the redemption of the captives of all Jews from the whole world. And all of us will go together with all of our property and all of our possessions to the land of Israel, to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, where the Evan Shasiya, the foundation stone, has never changed. May that be taken from Yad Mamish immediately and imminently. A summary of the synopsis. The Rebbe says that Parsha V'Yigash demonstrates the strength of Yehuda, that he was not deterred by the viceroy. He approaches him without permission, speaks tough. This strength was higher and more powerful than the strength of Yosef himself, even though he was the leader of Egypt. But he nevertheless was subservient to the limits and the rules of the country. Yehuda transcended all those limits, even though he depended on Yosef. And that's why he brought about that the Jewish people, when they settled in Egypt, they should settle with strength, with total freedom, without any limits. And that's what will eventually bring to the sovereignty of the descendants of Yehuda, of David, the complete redemption, that will have no limits because of the connection to God. And the Rebbe then brings an example of this strength with Mordechai, who conducted himself like Yehuda. He didn't care about all the limits imposed by the world and Golus. The Medrash, the way it's explained in Chassidus, talks about two approaches, how we can conduct ourselves like Mordechai in the time of exile, which is the time when Haman's will dominate. According to one approach, we can't do that. Either we're in Golus, we're in exile, or we're above it. Second approach says, no, God has the power to do this, but when? It'll happen in the time of Geula. The third approach, which the Gemara, the Talmud, brings, is that every Jew has the power to do it even today by connecting himself with God, because even in Golus, God gives us the power that we could stand above the constraints of Golus. The Rebbe then said there are now Svarim books that belong to the Rebbes of Chabad that are in captivity in Russia, and they should be redeemed. And the way we do it, our contribution is by purchasing Torah books and that will hasten the redemption of those books. And then the Rebbe speaks about how the deed is the essential thing, and he gives four instructions. Number one, we should show strength and determination and courage in matters of Judaism, because we have the knowledge that the whole world was created because of Yisrael, because of Israel. Number two, the books that belong to our Rebbes and our leaders should be restored to 770. And the way we accomplish that, number three, is to purchase books and holy writings, new books, including ordering books ahead of time. And the Rebbe used the Yiddish word for that, prenumeranten. And number four, to take advantage of the custom to give others as gifts, including children, holy books, gifts for holidays and other happy occasions. The highlights of this talk, the Rebbe says, God gives every Jew the power that even when he's in Golos, he can conduct himself in accordance with the will of Mordechai, that everything that he does, he can stand above the world, above the constraints of Golos, of exile, because he's connected to God. And that's why he will not kneel, he will not bow to all matters that are not consistent with serving God. And all this depends on is the Jewish person's will. But there are differences between the various generations. In most generations, we had external pressures, decrees of the government and the like, that prevented us from making that choice to transcend Golos. But now, we don't have any of those impositions, and it depends only on our choice, on our will. The Rebbe also said, moreover, that this is hinted in the words, Vayigash Elof Yehuda. Yehuda approaches him, that together with the strength that we get from the Joseph of our generation, namely, the Rebbe referred to the previous Rebbe, his father-in-law, the leader of our generation, so we get our strength from Yosef, we also have the strength of a Yigosh Elof Yehuda, the strength of Mashiach, who will come very soon and be our exclusive leader. And this, the strength to reveal this, comes from the Yosef of our generation. And with the book, Besuras HaGeula, focuses on the excerpts of the Rebbe that speak about redemption, the Rebbe says as follows, as mentioned many times recently, according to the announcement of my sainted father-in-law, the leader of our generation, all the preparations for the redemption have already been completed. And now the redemption just requires to be drawn into the material and coarseness of the world. A coarseness that is converted into the material and revealed to the physical eye. We have to bring the redemption into the lowest parts of the world. Now, the Rebbe says, one need only open the eyes to see that the whole world demands that every Jew stand in the condition and situation of the true and complete redemption. It may be said that this is the reason why we see today that Jews can maintain their Judaism with great strength and mastery also over the nations of the world. For it all depends on their will. We are immediately prior to the redemption when it will become actually revealed that David, my servant, will be the leader over them forever. The nations will know that I am the Lord. This is reflected in the actual situation of our generation, which is a preparation for the true and complete redemption through a righteous Mashiach. Further, the Rebbe says, this is also indicated in the words Yehuda approached him, together with the assistance from the power of the divine service of the Yosef of our generation, my sainted father-in-law, the leader of our generation, we also possess the power of Yehuda approached him, namely Mashiach, who will actually come imminently when, as it says, David, my servant, will be the leader over them forever. This comes through the support of an infusion of strength from the Yosef of our generation, who you are like Pharaoh, which refers to the Pharaoh of holiness. The word Pharaoh means totally exposed, as the Zohar says that it means that through him all the lights are uncovered and revealed.